and you have paid a fee for that notice. So it has changed significantly from the B engrossed version. It takes out, there were a couple of qualifiers. One, that the land that was going to, the owner of land would only get notice if the land was within the EFU. And there were a couple other things having to do with whether they qualified for farm assessment. That was the other one. Those have been removed.
Yeah, Beth.
Elizabeth, on line 9, you have owners of land that are within 250 feet. Shouldn't that be is you are referring to? Thank you.
To be getting a little
we have
we need the members for quorum. We have 5 people.
There are 35 of us here.
Only 9.
Are there 35 here? We will take a recess, and I will announce on the floor after roll call we will be coming back. So this is a recess. Elizabeth, if we can take right off where we left off, and I apologize for you waiting, but we will probably be in and out.
Yanked out of here again.
Yanked out again.
Okay.
We were on page 10.
Page 10 in the notice provisions. I think I'd explained those, so we can move on.
Oh, I left my copy up
there. Didn't we do this by conference call?
The down at the bottom of page 10, beginning on 25, is the rest of the lot of record provision for the EFU, basically defining when one lot or parcel exists. And the differences are that we've included only persons and spouses, or the partnership or business entity. We took out brother, sister, all the other relatives. We do have a definition of contiguous in this section, and you may want to look at that because there has been questions about how good a definition that is.
I think, well, we will get back to that, but I think if we're going to do this, I think we want to use the public road or whatever definition you were looking at.
Madam Chair, a real quick question. We used that language once before. Was it last session in the lots of record bill?
That this is the language from the lots of record provision, yes. There are no other changes. Let's see. I don't believe there are any to section 7 from the B engrossed version, or 8 or 9. So we move up to page 15, section 11, lines 24 through 28. This is the provision that you requested that I draft, allowing a county to require a person getting approval of a dwelling in an EFU zone to sign a statement declaring that they won't complain about accepted farming or forest practices. I used ORS 215213 in general, so it applies to all dwellings, both farm and non-farm. And
For page and number,
page 15, lines 24 through 28.
This is your amendment, Representative
Van Lennep. If
Madam Chair,
that
Representative Traher,
by applying to all dwellings, would you then apply it to dwellings that might be even inside the city or inside the urban growth boundary?
Well, what I mean is any dwelling that's approved under ORS 215213, and those would all be in EFU zones.
Oh, okay. So it is limited to EFU.
Yeah, it probably would not ever apply to a farm dwelling. I guess it wasn't intended to, they weren't anticipating that farmers would complain about other farmers. So it may not be a problem anyway.
Yes, there was a question, Representative Parkinson.
I'm going to pass.
Madam Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Line 26, is there a difference between statement and covenant?
I hesitated to use a covenant because, in my mind, that's equated with real property and putting certain restrictions and conditions on the use of property in the deed or the land use contract.
Also, given the First Amendment, what will happen in the first court case on cannot complain?
As we discussed, the legal enforceability of that statement is questionable. In other words, you can't make a person promise that they're not going to exercise their right to sue under the nuisance laws.
Right.
But as was explained, it might be evidence in the court case that the person knew when they moved on to the property that there were these other uses existing there, and that may affect how the court would come down on the decision of whether or not there was a nuisance and what the damages were.
Representative
Vandenberg.
Madam Chair, if I understood you correctly, you said that you wrote it so that it wouldn't go in the deed. What I would prefer is that it be in the deed.
Well, the person's not... When a person goes to get a permit for a dwelling, they're not dealing with the deed at all.
Well, that's right, too. Okay.
I think sometimes statements like that they have to sign, they're less likely to complain. And whether you can enforce it or can't enforce it, it is sort of a fact that they acknowledge that it's there. And it's a deterrent form of complaint, probably more than anything else.
Madam Chairperson?
Representative Priestley.
A statement will go with the person, though. Won't a covenant go with the land? You want to stick with the land, don't you? You sell a house 7 years later to somebody else, and they didn't sign the statement.
Right.
That's the last thing we'll decide then on page 15.
Okay, moving right along.
Page 16, section 12 is the amendment that was submitted by Ron Eber. I put it in here exactly as he gave it to me. As I've looked at it in print now, I would change that so that it reads better because it's not real clear. Beginning on line 10, I would cross out extend, and everything would be deleted down through line 12. After two and before interfere.
That doesn't work.
Okay, the way it would read is, beginning on 10, therefore, if such conditions arising, therefrom, if such conditions do not interfere with the use of adjacent lands within an urban growth boundary, I would add. So that counties could not unreasonably restrict or regulate farm structures or practices as long as those conditions didn't interfere, the conditions that are created by those practices didn't interfere with uses within urban growth boundaries.
Madam Chair, she must have a different copy than I've got if she's just taking out extend.
Well, no, I'm beyond the boundaries of, et cetera, is already bracketed. And then I would take out the underlined language on line 11.
Oh, okay.
I meant everything from extend down through halfway through line 12 would be deleted.
And insert what?
What you're doing is on line 9, starting with the word extend, you're deleting the rest
line
of that
10.
Line. All of line 11 and line 12, you would delete growth boundary in such manner as to.
Right.
You would delete that. So from line 10, it would read, conditions do not interfere with the use of adjacent lands within an urban growth boundary.
Right.
Thank you.
then the only other thing that's left is Section 13, which is the reporting section. I split it the way it was proposed so that you have the land conservation and development for the uses in EFU land. You have the county submitting information to the commission, and then the commission submitting a report to the Joint Land Use Committee, and then that committee making recommendations to the legislature. Then for the marginal lands information, which is on begins on page 17 at line 13, you have the county reporting first to the committee, the Joint Land Use Committee, the committee making recommendations to the commission, and the commission reporting to the legislature, are making recommendations. You might want to think about making, if you want to go through both bodies, you might want to think about at least making it go the same route, just for consistency's sake, from my drafting point.
Maybe the counties would like it consistent, too.
How about a shortcut sent right to the archives?
That's where it belongs. Thank you.
Representative Trahan.
Just to refresh me, because I seem to have dropped off someplace, what committee are we talking about in line 14?
The interim
joint land use.
Oh. Did it say that?
It says it at the beginning, and then through the rest of it, it's just the committee.
Back to page one.
Madam Chair.
Beth.
I have passed out to each of you a copy of the exceptions process as it exists in the printed version of 2295 currently, and the existing lot of record law with the deletions and changes that were proposed in this section. So those, according to what was adopted in concept for the purpose of the draft, should be included along with SB 237B-12. Also, in the break that we just had, it was pointed out to me on page 1, line 15, that it doesn't, we've got an inconsistency in here. The test for forest operations looks to the future and what they're capable of, and yet I've said in 3 of the 5 years preceding the effective date of the act. So I think we want to just delete all of line 15 except the and.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair.
Representative Troop.
Would you like a motion on that?
Yes.
I'll move Elizabeth's proposed change.
Representative Troop moves that we delete line 15 except for the word and.
Page 1?
Page 1, line 15. Any discussion?
Delete line 15 except for and?
Except for the last word. You would delete in 3 of the 5 preceding and the effective date, in 3 of the 5 years preceding the effective date of this 1983 Act.
I think the semicolon needs to stay too, but.
Well,
technical.
We'll let you worry about semicolon in this situation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Madam Chair.
Representative Anderson, then Representative Van Leeuwen.
I guess we're back to page 1.
Yes.
And I guess the thing that we massaged forever was the line 11. We did come up with did not contribute to farm operation. I keep going back to our discussion with a planner from Crook County that there was not any parcelization, at least under that current draft.
Could you speak up a little, please?
Yes, I keep going back to Crook County planner who, at least it was his opinion, they didn't have any marginal land. And I would look at the city of Prineville as I come down there, and I look at the rim rock outside the town, and I would say, you know, if there's going to be marginal land, that would be the place I'd want to build my house. Well, under the bill, it's not possible, because that land is part of a 4,000-acre grazing area. And it does contribute to a farm operation as the current land thing that we have. So if you're going to have any flexibility for a situation like Crook County or Deschutes County or whatever, then you have to have a different term. Materially contribute. The Senate language was a significant contribution. That may be a little more onerous. I don't know, but it's obvious that that rim rock is not being grazed. I don't know where you are.
Madam Chair?
Representative Troop. Oh, wait, excuse me. I had Representative Van Leeuwen was next.
My question was, you had referred to this exceptions process and you dropped it midstream, and I didn't know what your intent was there.
Just so that you would all have a copy of what was amended into 2295.
Okay, I thought at one point you had said you were going to put it in with this.
Well, we can do that too, whatever the committee chooses to do. Representative Troop and then Representative Trahan.
I'm a little mixed on what the goal is here. Do we want to give flexibility to where if somebody has a scenic piece of property that they could carve it into home sites, or what specifically would be the goal there? I'm a little unclear. Question to Representative Anderson.
Well, I guess. I can't read the minds of people in Crook County, but I'm told we're unhappy with the commission or the procedure or whatever, given that they did vote for Initiative 6. Now if we're trying to do something for those people and they find out we've done nothing, I'm just reaching for some way, and I don't know what's right, but I do know that if you use the word contribute to a farm operation, that is very specific. That if one sheep is running on even 50 acres, it's contributing to that farm operation. So I'm looking for a middle ground of a word that doesn't throw the thing wide open, but that would allow somebody to do something in the way of marginal land in that county. So,
Madam Chair?
Representative Troop?
I know Crook County fairly well. It's contiguous to my home county, and don't live too far from it. And Crook County is made up of a small community, Prineville, with an urban growth boundary. And outside the urban growth boundary, it's either large blocks of irrigated pasture land or larger ranches, dry land ranches. And there are not all that many small parcels. It hasn't been parcelized over time, or at least not major sections of the county that have been parcelized. It hasn't had the growth, for example, that some of the other counties in the Central Oregon area have had, Klamath County, Deschutes County. It's been a relatively stable community. There hasn't been a lot of new industry in the area. That agriculture base is probably, along with forest products, a major industry in that community. And I personally don't see it as constructive to say that if somebody owns a 4,000 or 5,000 acre ranch, or if somebody has 500 acres of irrigated pasture land, that they'd be able to spin off their rim rock, or their if they happen to be on the edge of the cliff overlooking the town that sits down in the valley below, that they can spin that off and divide home sites. If you're looking for terminology to allow somebody who has a large block to be able to try to find a couple of lots on that large block to spin off into rural residential home sites, I think that violates the intent of what I think the initiators of this particular legislation had in mind. Maybe we ought to, if the problem is in that range land that you're talking about, most of the parcels are 2,000, 4,000 large ranches. Possibly if we do have some smaller parcels in that rangeland, maybe we ought to look towards allowing, maybe we ought to put a different parcelization test to rangeland than we do to other kinds of farm operations, because obviously that rangeland requires a lot larger economic unit in order to be economically viable. So possibly we ought to, for that rangeland, expand the partialization size, something like that. Rather than loosening the definition, let's try to maybe go within the existing framework in the bill. Could we work something like that out?
Madam Chair.
Listen to it.
Representative Traynor.
Well, two or three comments, I guess, Madam Chair. First of all, Representative Troop, given your example of Crook County, which I agree with your assessment of the area, I don't see what the concern is because they haven't grown. And there's not a real heavy demand for some of those kinds of lots. But that's a side issue to what we're discussing right now. I think I would like to go back to Representative Anderson's comment on the word contribute and point out the way I'm reading this, and I'd like to maybe ask counsel if I'm correct. But let me skip a line and a half there. The proposed marginal land, I'm on line 11, the proposed marginal land did not contribute, and then dropped down to the middle of line 13 to a forest operation capable of producing an average over the growth cycle of 10,000 in income per year. And I think that the way that's written, that we're talking about contribution to both a farm, a ranch, or whatever, or contribution and income in the same contribute applying to both sections. If I'm not mistaken, that's the way I'm understanding it. And I think that the same concerns can be applied to some of our forest land that a large parcel might well have produced 10,000 income per year, and have a piece of it that is certainly something that we'd like to say perhaps is marginal. And this particular part of the bill, the way it's drafted, is the first criteria.
Right. Everybody has to meet
the other two. Say, well, now if you do this, then you can do that and that.
Yeah.
But
right.
But this is the first criteria, and I have a real concern about it because it
absolutely,
frankly, just locks out southern and eastern Oregon. And, if we're going to have a marginal land bill, I think we ought to have something that that addresses the concerns of those.
I've got that piece of land.
Madam Chair.
Representative Anna.
I think the issue right here addresses part of the real frustration with LCDC. I'm quite familiar with Crook County, too, because I lived in Deschutes County for a while, and it's just hard to justify locking up all of that land and saying that none of it can be used as marginal land, and some of it, in my own category of marginal land, well, I'd sure hate to have to try and make a living off of some of it.
Madam Chair.
Madam Chair.
Representative Hill.
I just, it seems to me that we're talking about land that, if it meets the income test, people are making a living off of it. And it has to meet the income test before it could,
well
as the other test.
Excuse me, sir. Not if you gross $20,000 off of a 4,000-acre operation. It certainly doesn't make a living for anybody on a gross.
Grossed at least $20,000.
Madam Chair.
Representative Tripp.
If we're using my own county, Deschutes County, as an example, it might be there might be four or five 4,000-acre operations in the whole county, and most of them are much smaller than that. And I think Representative Hill's comment is very germane. Secondly, we're not talking about locking up tremendous amounts of land. We're talking about setting a procedure to loosen, to be able to designate certain lands as marginal, as an additional tool to be used with the exceptions process and other processes that we currently have available. I think you've got it turned around a little bit. We're not talking about closing it up. We're talking about, in the marginal lands designation, opening additional pieces of ground for rural residential.
Maybe we can get a...
Madam Chair, I was agreeing with Tom's statement somewhat.
Oh, okay. I missed it. I'm sorry. I was out of the room for a moment and accept my apology.
But maybe we needed to use a different parcelization test for areas like Crook County, which I'm quite familiar with, too.
Please accept my apology. I missed the first part.
Could we get up here real quickly, Russ and Dick and Elizabeth, because there's something we have to clear up here, and I'm going to ask one question so we can make a decision and get on with this bill. We have 17 more pages to go.
Madam Chair.
Representative.
Well, it's convenient after the present line of reasoning or whatever, then I'd like to get stuck in for a question. For a statement. Just put me in line.
Sure. I have two questions to ask you, and maybe we can then move on a little bit. First of all, as Elizabeth pointed out, I think we need to clear up on the farm income, at least in 3 of the 5 years preceding the effective date of this act, what kind of dates or timelines that we're talking about there, what was intent. So we clear that up so everybody goes out of here knowing the test there. What can we do? Any one of you?
Richard Benner for 1,000 Friends. I was talking to Lois and Hector, both of whom are farmers, and they suggested that it be tied to calendar year. Most farmers, they say, use the calendar year, so that it would say something like this: in 3 of the 5 calendar years preceding January 1, 1983.
You have any problem with that?
It's almost the exact wording I have.
Any problem with the committee with that?
Whereabouts is it? I thought I was still back here on line 11, but we're not on line 11.
Well, one of the things that is not in here, Representative Priestley, she brought up, is you need to clarify if you're going to measure the income in 3 of the preceding 5 years. You start that income from April to April, July to July, January to January, and if you go with their suggestion, that clarifies it.
Yeah.
Any objection?
As long as you're on that little section, the language is not very clear. Down below, on line 14, it says growth cycle of 10,000 in income per year. Up there, you say income in 3 of the 5 years.
Right.
Is that each year, or is that 3 year total?
Yeah.
I think you
already penciled in that it means income per year in 3 of the 5 years.
Okay, is there any objection to income per year? And I mean, to clarify when that income cycle
Chair,
is.
No
just,
objection, but I thought Elizabeth took out the entire sentence except for "and" a few minutes ago.
She did on line 15.
Line 15.
Well, where are we then?
12.
Madam Chair.
So it would read, let me give it to you. It would read.
Okay.
In line 12, it would read, that produced 20,000 or more in gross income per year in 3 of the 5 calendar years preceding January 1, 1983.
Same language is down below.
Madam Chair.
Representative Van Leeuwen.
If you just insert annual on line 12 between gross and income, what would that do?
Gross annual income.
You could do it that way or per year.
Either way. Representative Parkinson.
When we're talking about preserving our farmland, I think the income test is phony. One person could make $20,000, another person could make $10. And so I'm not going to support any amendments that either help or hurt the income test.
On that, Chair.
They're putting per year in line 12.
Representative Trainer.
I guess Representative Parkinson has touched on the key to the issue. This whole section is phony. There's no way in the world that they're going to be able to identify 15 or 20 years from now what these $20,000 or over the average growth cycle, 10,000, and it would mean it, nothing. And I think we're really kidding ourselves with this kind of a test in the bill. I would much rather see us go back to using some kind of a land class that identifies good farmland or good forest land and tie to that so we know what we're talking about.
Representative Trahan, we had, and I will just mention this briefly, we had the other day someone from Linn County.
It's in 2295.
And there is a method that they are experimenting with right now called the LISA or LESA method. It certainly is not ready to use on a statewide basis or anything else. We are going to ask that Linn County on their decisions under the current law and then under that, because as I understand that will be online in the next 6 months. Is that right, Mark? Hopefully, that they look at the decisions that they make, and then also take those same decisions and see what the decision would have been under the new system. So we get an idea of what would happen if you did use just the land classifications.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Trahan.
I did miss that testimony in committee. However, I did talk to the folks from Linn County and am familiar with the LISA system. It certainly is an interesting concept. It's a much finer measurement of land classification than we presently have in the state. It also is going to cost a substantial amount of money to try to put that kind of system across the state of Oregon. I think it's cost a bunch of money in Linn County. And when you start going the rest of the state, it's going to be very expensive.
I understand that they've already put in Senate Bill 2295 to a section that they shall study it. My understanding is that's something that may be required of all states for federal funds, too. So, I mean, I don't have any idea. I don't, you know, it's certainly not ready to be used on a statewide basis, so we're going with another task. Representative Parkinson.
Madam Chair, I'm going to make a suggestion that maybe could allow this bill to be compromised and proceed on through the process, and that would be, first let me ask a question. The marginal lands portion of the bill is permissive?